Atmanam himself. Prakritishu. Under the seven royal elements. Ada. Directly. Vidhaya. Placing. Shreyaha. Ultimate happiness. Apnuyat. May obtain. Rajya. By the king. Tata. So also. Prakritiyaha. The dependent royal elements. Naradeva. O king. Ahita adhuyaha. Offering wealth and other items. It's a translation. O king, O lord of humanity, when a king directly depends upon his associates and follows their instructions, he is happy. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and follow his orders, they are also happy. You can repeat. O king, O lord of humanity, when a king directly depends upon his associates and follows their instructions, he is happy. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and follow his orders, they are also happy. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The actual happiness of a king and his dependents is described in this verse. A king should not simply give orders to his dependents because he is supreme. Sometimes he must follow their instructions. Similarly, the dependents should depend on the king. This mutual dependence will make everyone happy. Okay. So, Atmanam Prakatishvada Nithaya Shreya Apnuyat Rukya Tata Prakritayo Naradeva Hita Dayaha. So, Om Ganat Timurandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Miritam Yenitas Mai Shigurve Namaha. So, directly, this verse, of course, is referring to those who are either Brahmins or Kshatriyas. And specifically, the king's prime minister, associates, and everything, they're usually Brahmanas. And the Brahmanas, according to the Vedic system, the Brahmanas are considered the natural spiritual master of all the other varnas. And the sannyasis are considered the natural spiritual master of all the varnas and ashrams also. So, so the king would actually follow the instructions, but these brahmanas actually had to be brahmanas. They couldn't just be, employees or what we call yes men or what they say in Hindi, chamchas. Chamcha. Chamcha, it literally in Hindi, is from the word chamach, which means spoon. Which it means basically a yes man. Or another word in English we have is bootlicker. So there's many different expressions for this. In India, of course, if you call someone a chamcha, it's actually an insult. Isn't it, Krishna Priya? Sometimes I'm walking with one of my disciples and I introduce him to people and I say, here's my chamcha, so. That's it. Anyway, so generally the politicians, they have their chamchas or their yes men. But the brahmanas, in order to be independent, had to be free from being controlled directly by the king with salaries. In other words, they weren't dependent in that sense on the king. Just like probably gives the example of Chanakya Pandit. And Chanakya Pandit, of course, when he disagreed with Maharaj Chandragupta, he just headed to the hills. You know, he didn't stick around because he was living, in spite of being the prime minister of the whole kingdom, he was actually living in a hut outside of the king's palace. Whereas on the other hand, you have so-called brahmanas, and I'm saying so-called, even though he was a caste brahman, like Dronacharya, who basically he was so much dependent, or he was so much of an employee of the king, that he acted irreligiously. He couldn't say anything when there was the attempted disrobing of Draupadi. And he just, like, kept quiet. Why is that? I mean, it's interesting. His fault was that he actually wanted more. We talked about this the other day. That was his quota. You know, his quota was basically that his child, you know, it's a very sad thing, of course, that his child couldn't get milk. And they had to mix chalk or some sort of white substance in the water to give his child Ashwatthama some milk. And then all his friends laughed at him. His friends did that, and they laughed at him, and they made fun of him. So Dronacharya was thinking, actually, I have to do something for my son. Because he was overly attached to his son. Actually, that was his fault. He was overly attached to his son so much that he relinquished his regulative principles or his brahminical principles. And then he was just tolerating things he shouldn't have tolerated and fought on the wrong side of the battle, etc. So, anyway, so that's not really what it means to be an advisor to the king. A perfect example of a good advisor to the king would be Vibhishan. Like when Ravana was wanting to kidnap Sita Devi and do other things too, Vibhishan would always advise him not to do it. And the other advisors would actually just go along with Ravana. And Vibhishan actually said that a good friend and a good advisor is someone who tells you something, even if it's unpleasant, for your own benefit. And of course, because of that, Vibhishan did what? He was insulted by Indrajit, and he left the kingdom, and he took the side of the opposing force. And you find a very similar story in the Mahabharata, with Vidura, that, of course, Vibhishan was insulted by Indrajit, and Vidura, he was insulted by Duryodhana. You know, he said, who asked this son of a maidservant to give his advice? And Vidura just, like, left at that particular point, right before the battle occurred, etc., because he was detached this way. He didn't actually live in the palace. He lived very simply. That's another example, good example. That Vidura lived so simply that when Krishna came to try to make peace before the battle occurred, etc., of course, Krishna did not want to eat in Duryodhana's kitchen because he understood that was very contaminating, and that was a source of contamination for Grandfather Bhishma and also Dronacharya. So Krishna said, you know, I'm not going to eat food with you, but I'm going to eat with Vidura. But it's described that Vidura was living so simply that all he could give Krishna was some porridge. And porridge means, like, you know, oatmeal or something like that. You know, something instead of, like, if Krishna had taken food, I'm not saying prasadam right now, but if Krishna had taken food in Duryodhana's kitchen, it would have been so opulent. You know, he would have had, you know, pakoras, sweet rice, halva, you know, whatever else they made in those days. Of course, in those days, they sweetened things with honey and, you know, tree sap and everything like that. But Krishna would have eaten like a feast, not only fit for a king, a king's feast, but instead he ate in Vidura's kitchen. So that indicates, you know, that whole story, even though it's not stated directly that Vidura was living in a, not exactly a poverty-stricken condition, but at least in a poorer condition then. And he could have lived in the palace. He was the brother. Remember that brother of Dhritarashtra and Pandu. But he chose to live very simply so he could be detached and give good advice. So anyway, so all he had was porridge to offer to Krishna. And Krishna chose that because it was offered with love and devotion. Whereas Duryodhana's bhoga would have been offered with hate and you know, perhaps even poison, because later on Duryodhana tried to kidnap Krishna. And of course Krishna manifested his universal form. So anyway, so here's some examples of basically good advisors rather than yes men. Of course, even in the Ramayana, you have Kumbhakarna who gave Ravana good advice, but ultimately he acted in the wrong way to fight with Ram. So these are examples. So on the other hand, you have people who, not even on the other hand, but people who don't like to take advice even from good advisors, and sometimes they even kill their advisors when the advisors give bad advice. In the modern day world, you have, let's see, his name is Kim Jong-un of North Korea. And it's described that even when his advisors give some bad advice, guess what happens? Not bad advice, or advice that's not pleasing to him. They get killed. He killed his uncle. He killed so many of his family members because they basically didn't agree with him, or he felt threatened by them. So this is actually not a good king. So even he mistreats his citizens. So the king, on the other hand, doesn't have to take advice from all the citizens, but he's open enough to hear from the citizens, and he makes decisions based upon their feedback. See, his advice is taken from the brahmanas, so we don't want to misunderstand this particular verse and purport and think that the king is actually following the advice of all the citizens, because generally most of the citizens are not brahmanas. Generally, especially in Kali Yuga, the citizens are shudras, kalo shudra sambhavat. And that, of course, is the problem with democracy, as Prabhupada would call it, democracy. That you have the majority of people who are shudras voting, and of course they vote for a particular candidate for usually the wrong reasons. You know, because like you see Tea Party, the Republican Tea Party right now, they're just riling people up, you know, with anger and vengeance and all sorts of motivations and moods that are actually counterproductive even to good governance. It's pretty interesting what they're doing. Pretty interesting and also very not so nice. So, like they're getting people really angry at immigrants, for example, when something, you know, this is one example, something needs to be done about the immigrant situation. We need the immigrants to pick our vegetables, to pick our apples and everything like that, because if the immigrants aren't there, as it's happened many times in the state of Washington, the apples just rot on the vine, or right on the tree. You see the shudra quality is just so angry all the time. Angry, lamenting, enemies, you know, denigrating people, ad hominem attacks on the president. I mean, this is a shudra quality. When you're actually a Brahmin, even if you have some difference of opinion, you don't engage in ad hominem attacks. Like even Prabhupada said, when we're dealing with a particular, let's say, philosophy that we don't like Mayavada philosophy, we don't attack the person, at least publicly. You know, privately we could do something, like Prabhupada said, there are certain things about Ramakrishna. But publicly, we just say, what is his philosophy? Like if someone talks about Sakshasai Baba, you say, what is his philosophy? And Prabhupada said, you deal with the philosophy, you don't attack the person. So the majority of people being shudras, when they make a decision or vote for someone, they're obviously going to vote for someone for the wrong reasons. You know, because they're angry with the opposing party, or they have some personal agenda, or they want, you know, a chicken in every pot or two cars in every garage. I think there was even that motto in one particular election, isn't it? Chicken in it. Both of them were mottos, a chicken in every pot, right? Can you imagine?
That was in the 1890s.
Can you imagine, you know, a chicken in every pot? And actually the king or president or prime minister or whatever is supposed to consider all the prajas to be like his sons. Praja means those who were born, including the animals. You know, can you imagine? And then you have such cruel people in charge of society. I mean, even go back to North Korea, for example. What he does, I mean, they brag, for example, there's no disabled people in North Korea. And you know why there's no disabled people in North Korea? Because they kill them all and they experiment on them. Or they put them to some island where they're going to die. And they take babies that are, you know, have some birth defect or something like that and kill them. They take them away from the baby. They buy them from the parents and kill them. You know, so you got these horrendous leaders of society. I'm not saying they're all bad, but they're not Krishna conscious. Anyway, so So basically, we don't believe in democracy either, you know, where everybody can have a voice. But everybody should have a right to give feedback to the king and leave the king up to make king or president or whatever. Let him make a decision, consulting his advisors. I mean, just like the example of Lord Ram, when he was the Rajarshi, when he was the king and emperor, whatever, even a dog had the right to make a complaint. You know, there's that interesting story in the Ramayana where the dog came up, and the dog made a complaint against the Brahmin. And so even dogs had rights in those days. So the dog went to the king and said, "My dear king, there's this Brahmin who's been beating me." And the king, instead of just saying to the dog, "Hey, you're just a dog," what did the king do? He called for the Brahmin and had a whole court case there. And he asked the dog, you know, explain what happened. And he asked the Brahmin, "Did this actually happen?" The Brahmin said something like, "You know, I was hungry that day. My blood sugar was low." And so the king and his ministers were debating how to punish the Brahmin. It's not that they actually did whatever the dog wanted. Of course, ultimately, they did follow the dog's advice, but not that they had to follow the dog's advice. So they were debating, you know, what should we do? What should we do with the Brahmin? And the dog said, "Can I make a suggestion?" And the dog said, "You know, make him temple president." Anyway, it's an interesting story. When I'm in Fiji, I say, make him the head of the Ram Mandali. Because they have all these Ram Mandalis in Fiji where they break the regulative principles basically as part of the Ram Katha. The regulative principle they break is intoxication. They always take this kava. This kava is like a muscle relaxant. It's an intoxicant. It's part of the ceremony for Ram Nomi. Interesting, isn't it? Everyone gets the men, not the women. Women are more religious. So the dog, he said, you know, make him temple president. And everyone was amazed, you know, why should he become temple president? And ask the dog. And then the dog said, "Well, the reason I'm a dog right now is previously I was temple president. And then I had to take the sinful activities of everybody, you know, in the ashram, but not exactly the temple, like in the ashram. And therefore, I became a dog. So that'll happen to this guy, too. And that'll be his punishment." Because everyone was thinking that he was getting rewarded for beating the dog, but actually he was getting punished for beating the dog. That doesn't mean one's getting punished by being temple president or GBC. Of course, Prabhupada did say that if GBC makes a mistake, you know what Prabhupada said? What'll happen? He'll be born as a... Does anyone know that story? He'll be born as a shudra in his next life. Because he said, he gave the example of Vidur, who was Yamaraj. He made a mistake with Mandavya Muni, and he punished Mandavya Muni by being pierced by a lance, because Mandavya Muni pierced an insect when he was very young with a piece of grass. It was a mistake, because you shouldn't punish a little kid who doesn't know any better. A little kid doesn't have the distinction. Discrimination. Like, you know, Giriraj doesn't have the discrimination. If he does something wrong, if he hits you, you don't hit him back, you know. But I've seen parents who've done that. They actually, the kid, you know, just hits the parent, and the parent says, "I'm going to teach you a lesson." Smack. So Yamaraj was cursed by Mandavya Muni to take birth as a sudra. In the same way, Prabhupada said, if a GBC member makes a mistake, "God, I've made so many mistakes." So then he has to be born as a shudra in his next life. So, anyway, with, what do they say? With great power goes great responsibility. Who doesn't make mistakes? So anyway, if we're born as a shudra, at least we can serve Prabhupada in the next life. So getting back to that story. So the dog had a right to speak, a right to give feedback to the king, but he didn't. It was not that he became the king's advisor at that particular juncture. And in the modern day and age, you see in the case of, it's Ashok, again, the Emperor Ashok, who's known as a great emperor who established Buddhism for all over India. It's described that he had a bell outside of his palace, and any citizen could come and ring that bell. And he would get the king's attention. Hopefully he wouldn't do it in the middle of the night. You know, wake the king up. But he had that right to speak to the king. It's a great emperor. He was the emperor of all of India, basically, at that particular point. And he had conquered a great deal of India and then later became saintly because he realized how cruel it was to hurt people in the conquering process. But still, he became open like that. So that's the sort of leader we need. Actually, in Fiji, the leader is like that, too. His name is Ram, anyway. Also, he's not Indian. It's actually interesting. His name is Bani Narama. And he gave his cell phone number out to all the citizens. And they could call him at any time and talk to him. Of course, it's a lot easier when you got a country with only 900,000 people. You know, obviously in America, you wouldn't want to be calling Barack Obama at any minute, you know, and so forth. Who's this? This is Barry. You know, I have a complaint, you know, Hare Krishna temple, we're being harassed or something like that. They don't let us wear dhotis in Krishna West. So we don't want that. Anyway, so this is the sort of good governance system that we should establish, that the brahmanas give advice, but everybody has a right to give feedback. And even, let's say, in the microcosm, what's a microcosm? The family, for example. We've been studying empathic communication, nonviolent communication, and how there's this interesting person who spoke about how to raise children. His name is Alfie Cohen. I don't know if you ever heard of him before. And he talks about how you have to bring the children in the decision-making process. Obviously, you don't let the children make all the decisions because they'll decide that every weekend they go to Disney World. Or, you know, for dinner you should always have lollipops. But still, the idea is if you bring... let the children and the other men, all the members of the family, meet together and decide, you know, general family policies, then people feel much more allegiance to the family. And so Prabhupada, of course, wanted that in the temples. They called that an istigosti, where the devotees would get a chance to participate, you know, ask questions and participate in the general management of the temple, because generally in the temple everyone's supposed to be a Brahmin, or at least Brahminically inclined. So anyway, so these are some of the points about democracy or good governance, that a king or temple president or minister or whatever should have in taking care of his dependents. So any questions or comments? Actually, leave a lot of time open. Yes?
Well, like in the case of the Dura, like when they were insulted, they were able to leave. But like sometimes devotees might find they're in a situation, they have a particular service, but then people around them behind their back are inimical or speak harshly about them. And then, you know, should they leave or should they stay?
No, they continue. Service to the mission is one thing. But if you're serving the leader, you know, if you're serving a leader who is, you know, abusive or doing something adharmic, first of all, you don't leave. You try to rectify the situation. It's not that Vibhishan or Vidura left immediately. I mean, they spent years trying to rectify the situation. And Vibhishan, he described his situation was like living like the tongue in between the teeth. Can you imagine that? I mean, just like even sometimes by accident I bite my tongue. Has anyone here ever bit their tongue by accident? I mean, when you're trying to eat too fast, you're not paying attention to your eating. So can you imagine living like that, being the tongue in between the teeth? So he did that for years and years. And he had to worship Vishnu in secrecy, basically. And Vidura, what he had to tolerate for years and years and years. So he tried to rectify the situation. So it's not that we leave, but we see something irreligious. We try to rectify. And nowadays in ISKCON, we have this system, it's called an ombudsman system, where you could actually write a letter to your ombudsperson system, to make it non-sexist. So, and the GBC will follow up on it. I mean, we have so many cases. I mean, actually, most of the cases we're dealing with right now in the North American GBC are because of some devotee not being satisfied with something that was happening, even spiritually. I mean, no really gross torture in the temple. Although, I can think of one temple, when Prabhupada was present, I'm not going to mention the name of the temple, we were talking about this yesterday, where the devotees were tortured. And they became, I mean, they assumed the qualities of the leader, basically, because they thought they just had to follow blindly. I mean, I was at this temple for, I think, 2 or 3 months during the summer, and I got beaten by the temple president, you know, physically, because I was sick and I didn't get up and work, you know, 103 fever, and he hit me with a stick, and he said, "Get up, you get better." I got even with him, but anyway, that's another story. But, so it's not that we just sit back idly and watch something that we understand to be irreligious or mistreatment of devotees. So we complain to the ombudsman system, and they try to deal with it in a non-judicial way. And if that doesn't work, there's also judicial, you know, there's judicial methods of dealing with situations. So, but we stick to our services like that. It's not that because someone insults, you know, somebody, you know, anybody who has any position in ISKCON is going to have people talking behind their backs and insulting them, especially on the internet. I mean, that just goes with the territory. It's a sign of, it's actually a sign that you're doing something. Yes.
Sometimes it's, besides people talking behind one's back.
Yeah.
And, it can be that people are just mocking you for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And that can actually be a person's energy level to be able to do the service.
Yeah. So then we have to ask for help if it depletes our energy level. I mean, different people respond in different ways. I mean, some people just go take shelter of Krishna's names when that happens. And, I mean, like you even have Rishabhadev who put himself in a position so people would mock him so he'd be more Krishna conscious, isn't it? Jada Yoga. Yeah. So it depends on the person, but we do have mechanisms in this country. We should have mechanisms, and we have older devotees we can go to, like here, you know, someone's mocking you, you go to Drishtapuru, you say, you know, someone's mocking me. And, you know, maybe you can come to me, but I'll just make a joke out of it, so it's not so good. But anyway, so you go to someone who can take care of it. But sometimes it's just like that. It's just like, I mean, there's magazines published mocking the leaders of ISKCON. Even the magazines are called Back to the Prabhupada. And I think it's just practically life with the internet in Kali Yuga, and, you know, the telephone, the internet, and all these methods of communication. But yes, we should try to stop these things, but we don't, you know, I haven't left town because people were mocking me. You know, I would leave town if I couldn't rectify a impious situation. You know, if something was going, like we had a temple president who was torturing and I couldn't rectify it, I wouldn't go along with the torture and watch him try to disrobe ladies in the temple or something like that. You know, that's another thing. But Vidura tried his best. That was the point. He tried for years and years and years and his best. And basically, both Vidura and Vibhishan felt threatened. Let's say Vidura first. Duryodhana said, you know, just beat him within an inch of his life. He was ready to have his uncle beaten. And Vibhishan, of course, could have been easily killed by Ravana. So they both felt physically threatened. I mean, they had to save their lives, basically. Yeah. Akrura? What, you mean in terms of what? Yeah. I mean, he was supporting. But he understood it was Krishna's plan to kill Kamsa. But he made a big mistake. He offended the gopis. That was his mistake. It's never described that his mistake was to bring Krishna, I mean, the actual bringing of Krishna to Mathura to kill Kamsa. or that he was, you know, Kamsa's assistant or something like that. But his mistake was offending the gopis. And therefore he was called a cruel, which means not cruel. In fact, he was the most cruel, and he was cursed, and later on he got in trouble because of that. But that was a pastime of Krishna. That was a pastime. I mean, sometimes you remain somewhere if you can make some difference. Even if you're with an evil person, like if you're a spy for his opposing... Anyway, there's so many things. Like the government has spies. I'm sure the government has spies in North Korea and other places like that. And they remain in their situations so they can report on what's happening. So there's extenuating circumstances. But as far as ourselves, I wouldn't leave service because people don't appreciate me. If I was physically threatened, yes. Or if there was illicit activity and I was condoning it by remaining there. That's another point. Anyway, it's interesting. Is there any other questions or comments? Yeah.
I'm completely off the subject, but we were talking about how people are shudras and they elect people to desire sense gratification.
Yeah.
So we see that going on all the time, that instead of giving good yad atrati straight stuff, the great men do come and follow.
Yeah.
It's almost the reverse, too.
Yeah.
The common men ask, great men give them.
Yeah, exactly.
They want stuff, and so the politicians, they pander to them, well, we'll give you the stuff you want. So that's the whole
the
dynamic. It's shudras and shudras and vaishnavas.
Yeah, that's the problem with democracy.
Yeah.
And the original democracy, I think, was in Greece, where it was more of an absolute democracy, but every day they were changing the laws. You know, every day all the citizens. Of course, when we talk about citizens, not that everybody was a citizen. There's only the free citizens, the men. The women couldn't vote. The foreigners couldn't vote.
The slaves couldn't vote.
The slaves couldn't vote. You know, it was a small minority, but still, it was a disaster, Greek democracy. Everything was changing every day. It was the rule of the mob. And that's why basically democracy is rule of the mob. And the expert politicians pander to the tastes of the general populace. And then you